Doctor Who's Sliding Doctors by K.G. Redhead. Read by David Nagel, Tegan Harris and Stephen Saunders.
See the TARDIS. Outside, it looks like a gaudy cupboard, or rather, postmodern wardrobe. It sits there looking all blue and weird, a relic from past sitting, in the future where it does not belong. It's an act of pure vulgarity on behalf of its owner, a man so inept at being a wise and intelligent alien being, he ran away from his own people in a stolen ship. How he avoided an ASBO is anyone's guess, and it's not like they haven't tried either. Three times now he's managed to evade full responsibilities for his actions. The first time they let him off with community service, the second time he ended up their leader, and the last time not even he himself could get him tried and convicted. To say he leads a charmed life is to underestimate his luck. A temple bosun who charts the parting of the ways as they go this and that. The nautical hyperbole is all an affectation, of course. Although he views his craft as a sort of ship, he himself sees his calling as that of a scientist, assuming the title Doctor in replacement of his name. They say names have power, but in this case, his is just boring and he'd rather have something more grandiose and mysterious because he's the sort of man who likes to hide himself behind a legend of his own making. It gives his fragile ego the extra boost to think that others are actually taken in by his charade. To further his charade, he takes on passengers from time to time, travelling companions of a sort. Their main function is to allow him to look clever and smug when he needs to look clever and smug. At other times they serve to get into places he dare not go himself, or if necessary, act as a barrier for the bullets. The small skinny girl is called Alice. She'd prefer to be referred to as a woman, but she still lacks the emotional maturity to have earned that title. She's got ginger hair and badly repressed schoolgirl memories of being called carrot girl and other more intimate insults regarding her hair when she grew older. She hates herself, and so like all humans, she takes it out on everybody else. She may be intelligent, but that hardly counts for anything these days when anyone clever enough to avoid smack or shagging your boyfriend 24/7 can pass a university course. She's the irksome goody-two-shoes that reminds her friends not to smoke inside and help little old ladies across the road, wherever they want to cross it or not. The other one is worse, in his own specific way. His serious lack of self-confidence is hidden behind a cockney veneer of overconfidence, and under that is a mile and a half of rank cowardice. He's not a boy any more than a man either. He's a little older, but no wiser, as wisdom is not a function of age but experience. His name is Chand. Don't ask for more, you won't get it. He loathes answers, preferring to imitate the Doctor and develop a sort of quiet mystique around himself. He has no idea what he wants to do with his life, not because he literally has no idea. It's more a case that he wants to do everything, and so far he hasn't decided in what order he wants to do it all in. See the inside of the TARDIS. It's like a mad slice of science fiction interlock with minimalism and a bad case of steampunk. None of it looks like it belongs in the same room as anything else. There are dials and levers and switches all sitting next to buttons and telepathic neural scanners, as if they were all developed by the same culture, when in fact they were not. The ship is embarrassed by this as anyone, and it can't complain because it's out of warranty. And anyway, who listens to what a ship wants? The Doctor is standing at the controls, trying to look like he can actually control things. See the worried look behind his eyes. He knows one day someone will guess the truth. He only hopes it's not today. He's wearing those question marks again. Oh dear. He thinks it makes him look slightly out of sync with the current vogue on any planet, whereas in fact it just makes him look untidy and scruffy. He's not fooling anyone. The others aren't much better. Her skirt is too short and his hair keeps getting in his eyes. Fashion can be as much about self-loathing as it can be about sending a message. Like I'm a cheap tart or I'm not as interesting as I want to be. They're young, though, so they're not as valuable as they could be, so they're easily replaceable when time comes to upgrade. See the anomaly. It's like red and blue mixed together, but without that thing that tells them to be purple. They form weird fractal patterns that prove that chaos is not the opposite of order, but is in fact its replacement. Nothing is more unrandom than things trying to be random. People would do well to remember this. See the badly repaired circuit board on the control panel. Should it be fizzing like that? The Doctor hasn't noticed it. Then again, there are a lot of things he hasn't noticed, like the fact he's about to hit the anomaly, or the fact that Chand is looking at Alice's cleavage again. However, things are going to change all of that. After all, it's not every day your ship suddenly develops a fault in the one component that's supposed to stabilise your position in the fourth dimension, is it? see the ship hit the anomaly, see it battered this way and that, see it flung in two slightly different directions at once. Someone really should have done a better job of fixing that circuit, shouldn't they? See Alice thrown against the wall of the ship, see Chan land on a heap on the far side. See the Doctor holding onto the controls, screaming for someone else to come and save him. See what happens next.
The planet Earth was quiet as the TARDIS landed. Earth is the sort of world you don't want to visit too often. The sky is dirty and will dissolve your lungs in only 70 years. This might explain why the natives have such a short lifespan compared to the rest of the universe. The location was England, London to be precise. London has been compared to many things in the past. A pearl, a glittering crown. Most visitors, however, agree that the depiction of London as Dante's hell is the most accurate there's ever been. The TARDIS had long ago made this city its unofficial home. Despite the protests of its alleged owner, it came back home every chance it could. The dust clouds hung heavy in the air. The blasted remains of buildings were silent as they were devoid of life. And above, the battle fleet of the Trarg Empire hovered solemnly over their conquered domain. The Trarg people are friendly, compassionate, charitable, and kind. Or in other worlds, psychotic, mass-murdering, invasion-friendly, genocidal monsters. Trarg influences have infected much of the Western Hemisphere of Earth in the last decade. Ah, midday and all's... hell. The Doctor looked about in that over-exaggerated manner he was wont to do. He saw nothing but ruin and devastation. Oh dear, there's been an invasion, he sighed. I do so hate these. Everywhere I go, invasion fleets and mayhem follow me. Another one? Alice asked. Who is it this time? The Doctor looked up into the sky at the fleet of killing machines above. Why was it always saucers? They weren't that aerodynamic, and most of them seemed to spin on a central axis, yet they had gravity nets in the floor, so they didn't need to rotate to cause artificial gravity. Oh, it's just the mighty and munificent Trarg Empire. A rather nasty lot as alien invaders go. They torture their victims for fun, and then leave them to die of their injuries. They're the worst sort of scum you can imagine. We better be off. He gave a dramatic shrug that said in galactic body language, I have better things to do than waste my time on a lost cause like this. The TARDIS is just over there. Aren't we going to stop them? Chand asked. I mean, that's what we do, isn't it? The Doctor sighed. This was not the time to make foolish decisions. What can we do? The world's been conquered, everyone's dead. The human race has been run, it's gone, finito, ended. Time to get the heck out of here. Oh no, we don't, Chan said sharply. There's a group of survivors over there. We've got to save them.
The planet Earth was quiet as the TARDIS landed. Earth is the sort of world you don't want to visit too often. The seas are toxic and will dissolve your skin in only 70 years. This might explain why the natives have such a short lifespan compared to the rest of the universe. The location was England. London, to be precise. London has been compared to many things in the past. A pearl. A glittering tiara. Most visitors, however, agreed that the depiction of London as Dante's hell is the most accurate there's ever been. The TARDIS had long ago made this city its unofficial home. Despite the protests of its alleged owner, it came back home every chance it could get. The trees swayed gently in the breeze. The ducks swam happily on a nearby pond. With the surrounding park was filled with a sea of human noises. And above, the battle fleet of the Trag Empire hovered solemnly over their new target. The Trag people are gracious, empathetic, benevolent, and gentle. Or in other words, sociopathic, mass-murdering, invasion-friendly, genocidal tyrants. Trag influences have tainted much of the Western Hemisphere of Earth in the last decade.
11 o'clock and all's well.
The Doctor looked about. He saw every sort of human he could imagine.
I say, you two, there's a mime over there.
He glared at the mime and knew a lost cause when he saw one.
There's always a mime, everywhere we go.
Alice viewed mimes like most people viewed a virus. The Doctor looked up into the sky, the fleet of killing machines arriving.
The mighty and munificent Trag Empire, a rather nasty lot as alien invaders go. They torture their victims for fun and then leave them to die of their injuries. They're the worst sort of scum you can imagine. We'd better be off. He gave a resigned shrug that said in galactic body language, I don't want to waste my time with third-rate opponents like these. The TARDIS is just over there. Aren't we going to stop them? Chand asked. I mean, that's what we do, isn't it? The Doctor sighed. This was not the time to make foolish decisions. What can we do? The world's going to be conquered and everyone will be dead. The human race will be run, gone, finito. Ended. It's time to get the heck out of here. Oh, no, we don't, Chand said sharply. We've got to save the Earth. It's our home.
They ran over broken fragments of buildings towards the group of survivors. The bricks were from homes, the concrete from buildings. Both were homes of a sort for humanity. Modern caves for modern cavemen. Alice tripped on a larger piece of rubble. Her stylish shoes were not designed to have scrabbling over post-apocalyptic ruins taken into consideration when they were being made. Are there many of you left? The Doctor asked the survivors. Strength in numbers and all that. Can we save the Earth? Chand asked the Doctor. I mean, we've seen the future. The Earth didn't die like this. The Doctor frowned. Time doesn't work like that. An event never happens until it does, and then it's always happened. So, if I changed history so that Mozart was never born, then we'd never have known who Mozart was, and he'd never been born. That's a paradox. Please try to avoid those at all costs. They give me a headache for a month, and a weird peppermint taste in my liver. The Doctor's biology is very complex and disturbing. Don't ask. You really don't want to know. Can we help these people, really? Alice asked the Doctor. I mean, there's so few of them. And look, there's a whole army of them. They'll want prisoners to interrogate, the Doctor replied. To find out how we survived, they'll make a mistake, and then I can make my move. Defeat their fleet and save the world. That's what I normally do, isn't it?
They ran over the grassy parkland towards a large clearing so they could observe the ships more clearly. The milling throng people should be at home or work, in huts of brick or caves of concrete. They were a sort of modern-day caveman, living in high-rise caves, and questing for fire involved flicking a switch. Alice tripped on a large tangle of grass. Her stylish shoes were not designed to have scrabbling over soft and bumpy grass taken into consideration when they were being made. Are there many more to come? The Doctor asked himself. Strength in numbers and all that. Can we save the Earth? Chand asked the Doctor. I mean, we've seen the future. The Earth doesn't die, so we must prevail. The Doctor frowned. Time doesn't work like that. An event never happens until it does, and then it's always happened. So, if I changed history so that Mozart was never born, then we'd never known who Mozart was, and he'd never have been born. That's a paradox. Please try and avoid those at all costs. They give me a headache for a month, and a weird spearmint taste in my liver. The Doctor's biology is very intricate and disconcerting. Don't ask. You really don't want to know. Can we really help these people? Alice asked the Doctor. I mean, there's so few of them, and look, there's a whole fleet of them. They'll want prisoners to interrogate, the Doctor replied, to find out our strengths and weaknesses. They'll make a mistake, and then I can make my move. Defeat their fleet and save the world. That's what I normally do, isn't it?
Captain Kanunga saw the small group of survivors, and he smiled with cold glee. Sergeant Train, annihilate that human scum. Train nodded and saluted eagerly to her officer. Yes, sir. I just equipped the lads with the barbed wire cannons. They cause a lot of pain, but they're hardly ever fatal, at least not immediately. Carry on, Sergeant. Kanunga smiled as a sadistic sergeant led her troops out into battle. This planet will make good fuel for our fleet once we detonate the world killer. Tales of their favourite weapon had reached Earth in the Roman era and inspired their spiteful and selfish attitude towards conquest. Namely, if they couldn't take the land by force, then they made sure the natives didn't want to keep it afterwards. This could explain why so much of the planet is now hostile and uninhabitable, like Stoke. The Doctor gasped when he saw the heavily armed soldiers crumping towards himself and his companions. Oh my. We are so dead, Alice sighed. Can't we make them see that we're friendly? We come in peace, Chan shouted loudly and held up his arms in surrender. The problem is, they can see we're unarmed, so they don't have to worry about us fighting back as they murder us. The Doctor took out his sonic screwdriver, but it really was all over, apart from the screaming and the blood. Lots of blood, and lots more screaming. There was no one to stop the world being destroyed, and the radioactive slag being turned into fuel for the engines of the huge space fleet. The Doctor was dead.
Captain Kanunga saw the small group of survivors, and he smiled with a cold glee.
Sergeant Train, annihilate that human scum!
Train nodded and saluted eagerly to her officer.
Yes, sir. I just equipped the lads with the barbed wire cannons. They cause a lot of pain, but they're hardly ever fatal. At least not immediately.
Carry on, Sergeant.
Kanunga smiled as the sadistic sergeant led her troops out into battle.
This planet will make good fuel for our fleet once we detonate the world killer.
Tales of their favorite weapon had reached Earth in the Roman era and inspired their malicious and cruel attitude towards warfare. Namely, if they couldn't seize the land by force, then they made sure the natives didn't want to hold on to it afterwards. This could explain why so much of the planet is now harsh and not fit to live in, like Swindon. The Doctor gasped when he saw the heavily armed soldiers crumping towards himself and his companions.
Oh my.
We are so dead,
Alice sighed.
Can we make them see that we're friendly? We come in peace,
Chan shouted loudly and held up his arms in surrender.
Fear not, the Doctor said with a flourish as he produced his sonic screwdriver. He aimed it at the advancing soldiers and turned their weapons to overload. They each exploded and then imploded a fraction of a second later.
What a senseless waste of life.
We're not gonna die!
Chand hugged Alice and then the Doctor.
We're alive!
There's still that lot up there, the Doctor pointed upwards. He aimed the sonic screwdriver at the nearest ship and sent it spinning upwards out of control and then inwards, spiraling towards the sun. If they surrender now, we'll have time to save them. If they don't, then they'll only have themselves to blame.
Don't be so mean to them,
Alice sulked.
We have to save them from their own silliness.
They plan to slaughter everyone on this planet, the Doctor replied. I cannot allow time to be changed so drastically. This timeline must not fail. The planet Earth is one of the 7 key nexus points of the web of time. The fabric of time will be undone. The universe will be rent asunder. Is that what you want? Is that what you really, really want?
No, but you don't have the right to kill all those people.
Alice shook her head sadly as Chand hugged her. She quite liked that, even though he didn't wash nearly enough for her liking.
I have that right, the Doctor replied slowly. Then he smiled. I can still save them, though. Send them far away from here, to a backwards part of the universe where they won't hurt anyone but themselves.
Outside of the field of mortal vision, two realities fought like snakes as they thrived together, trying to bite each other while trying to avoid being bitten themselves. If you look closer, they share one tail, which stretches backwards into the infinite past. The heads are now locked together, their distinct shapes merging back into one another. They slowly merge into one head again, as their timelines are restored back to the one they originally were. The Doctor clutches his head and yells in pain. Here in a TARDIS, he is protected from the worst of it. He is the Locust. The heart of the storm. He is the storm. He sees his two traveling companions suffering too. They are clutching their heads and screaming. Then it stops. But they don't realize it at first. That was horrible, Alice says to the men. I was dead and alive at the same time. I remember being shot. Chan started to cry. They shot barbed wire through my body. Bifurcated timelines. I made sure the favorable one became the dominant one. As a Time Lord, I can do that, you know. You'd rather be in that other timeline? Your world murdered, and us along with it? The Doctor tried to explain. They were reintegrated, and as we're alive in the dominant timeline, we remember both events. Luckily, you're human. Your brains are designed to filter out such traumas. You'll soon forget. It's one of the reasons I love humans so much. Your species is built to endure. Indomitable, that's the word. I shall never forget. My brain, however, is designed to see such things. It's the curse of my people. I can see all my possible deaths. Usually it happens in advance, though. I normally see it coming, so I can avoid it. This is the first time it's happened retroactively. His fingers tapped a few buttons. Ah, there it is. A small time storm. It created 2 timelines. When the storm ended, the timelines collapsed back into one again. Did you see the way we made the alien captain beg for his life? Chan said to the others. Yes, and we were both there, Alice replied. We saw exactly the same thing you did.
We won again. Chand grinned. We always win.
The Doctor nodded. Yes, I suppose if you want to call it that. It was a close thing too.
If the other timeline had won out, we wouldn't be here to have this conversation at all. What are you on about? Alice was worried that the Doctor was having a funny turn. The Doctor always says these weird things. Chan smiled. It's best to just humour him. They don't mean anything. The Doctor tried to smile. I suppose you're right. Where to next? A holiday? The planet always gets invaded the second I put a bikini on. Alice frowned. How about a museum? The Doctor pondered. Thieves break in and take us hostage. Chan wondered why the Doctor didn't recognise the pattern of their lives by now. I know. The Doctor managed something akin to a genial smile. It's a surprise. We're going to die, Chan said to Alice. I know, Alice replied. The Doctor watched his two companions leave to go back to their rooms or argue or make pizza, whatever they did that made them so alive. He unbuttoned his shirt to reveal the scars made by the barbed wire guns. That one was too close by far. A woman's voice filled the console room. It was giggling, but yet there was no warmth in it at all. Only cold, malevolence as deep and empty as space itself. One day you'll be mine. The Doctor laughed weakly. Not today, though. Once again, I prevail. There would be no fun if I killed you too quickly. I'll see you again one day, Doctor. The Doctor sighed. Is it really paranoia when Time herself has told you she's after you? She's never forgiven me for, well, you know. Have you? There was only the mocking laughter of a mad god, and that faded quickly. See the Doctor, a man pursued through time and space by forces beyond anyone's wildest dreams. See him weary of each battle and each Prihic victory. See the man broken down death by death as he fails to save them all. See him as he truly is, a desperate man pursued by a vengeful deity that wants nothing more than to see him die and watch everything he loves die with him. See the tragedy in his eyes and the bleakness on his face. Now you know why he never stops, why he never stays, why he never wants to be thanked. He's not a saviour. He's not a defender. He's a man on the run with death always at his heels. He is the Doctor. Pray you never get a house visit from him, because devastation always follows in his wake. See Alice. She's driven by her past to help others, because she doesn't want them to hurt like she did when she was younger. She's emotionally strong and confident. She's got a grip of herself, and she knows who she is and how to fight monsters. She's the best friend you need the most. She's comfort when you're down, and a kick up the arse when you need it the most. She's a firebrand, and you'd be better off with her on your side than opposed to you. See Chand, the Enigma. He's not content to be any one thing. He wants to do it all. He doesn't want to be a specialist and miss helping others. He's a generalist. He wants to help everyone. Behind his detached cool self is warmth and caring that reassure those who need it and gave him strength to succeed when he faces nearly impossible odds. He's bold and daring. He's always curious, and he's never afraid to risk everything to help save another. See the TARDIS, and fear its arrival one day. There will be a final confrontation, when the Doctor is finally ready. On that day, do you really want to miss such a terrifying battle? Of course, you may want to watch it from the relative safety of the next universe.